Soltar. Okay, the third reading of Parsha Shmos. Vayihi bayamim ahem. And so it came to pass in those days. Vayigdal Moshe, and Moshe was elevated. It can't mean that he grew up simply, because already in the previous verse at the end of the second reading, it says Vayigdal hayelet. And now it says Vayigdal Moshe. We'll soon take a look and see what the different commentaries say about that. Vayetze el Echav. So Moshe Rabbeinu goes out to his brothers. So precocious young Moshe has been elevated by the Pharaoh to the position of overseer over his personal household. Batya is very fond of Moshe, and she influences her father to appoint him to this position. Moshe Rabbeinu, at this point, we believe, is approximately 18 years old. And the Vayigdal that he experiences here, in addition to being elevated by the Pharaoh, as Rashi says, Vahaloi, after all, this is the second time in as many verses that the Torah says the same exact thing. Vahaloi kvar kosav Vayigdal hayelad. It already says the boy grew up and he was brought to the Pharaoh's home. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Eloi, Harishain Lekoima, the first speaks of height, of physical stature, Vahasheni Ligdula, and the second speaks of what you would call importance and prominence. As we said, Sheminohu Faroi Al Besai, the Pharaoh appointed him as overseer over his household. This is the approach that Rashi takes. However, others, like for example the Ramban, maintain that Moshe Rabbeinu first grew physically, he became mature physically, but then he matured personality-wise. He began to understand the inner workings of human nature, and he had a very clear perspective on what was going on in the world around him. So we're talking about maturity, not in a physical sense, not in a bodily or flesh sense, but we talk about maturity from a personality sense. So he's young, but very mature, and he sets out vayar b'sivleisam. He sets out to see the suffering or the burdens of his brethren. Vayar, and he sees ish mitzri, an Egyptian man, make ish ivri, relentlessly beating a Hebrew man, me'echav, from his brothers. So when it says vayar b'sivleisam, what does this mean, that he saw their burden or he saw their pain? And why did he have to go out to see that? It says vayetze alechav, he went out, vayar, and he saw. So the Emek Dover says something very interesting. He began to look into what was this entire slavery about. Like, he knew his brethren, they were working. They were working very hard. He said, why are they working? What is the goal? And he realized that the purpose was not the end in itself. It's not that the Pharaoh wanted to build or develop the infrastructure of Egypt, but that all of this was designed not to build Egypt, but to break the people. In other words, he looked deeply into their burden. He said, this is not a burden they're not bearing. They have no satisfaction. And this is a demoralizing thing. When a person works and feels achievement or accomplishments, you feel good about yourself. Here he said there was no sense of satisfaction, because they were actually building, like the Medrash says, in quicksand. And eventually all the buildings they would build would collapse. And it would be nothing to show for all your hard work, nothing to be able to demonstrate or take pride in. And so he realized that all of this was but to torment the people. And Moshe Rabbeinu sees this, so then that all of a sudden becomes a defining moment. And he goes then to see how his brothers are doing, and he sees there's an Ish Mitzri, there's this Egyptian man, and he's makir. He's relentlessly beating this Jewish man. Let's take a look in Rashi. Vayar b'siv leisam. Rashi says, Nosan einov v'liboy. He placed his heart and his eyes. Now, obviously, it doesn't mean his physical eyes, because we're equating this to the notion of the heart. He related to them. He empathized. He understood their pain. Lihis meitzer aleim, so that he would feel their pain. Instead of being merely a casual observer seeing somebody's pain, he identified with, appreciated, and understood the pain that his brethren was experiencing. And then he looked into the situation of this Noigesh Hoya, as Rashi says. The Ish Mitzri was one of the taskmasters whose job was to push and to pressure the Jewish people, the Hebrews, the slaves. And he's Memunah al Sheitri Yisrael. This fellow was the responsible for the work detail, but not for the actual slaves, but for the people amongst the slaves whose job it was to drive the slaves. Under what you would call, I guess, the officers of the work detail. V'hoye ma'amidam, he would wake them, mikreis ha'gever, from the time that the rooster crows, and having spent the night in Kfar Chabad, a few nights, I could tell you, that's like about 3 o'clock in the morning. So he would come very early on, before day broke, and he would wake them, l'malachtam, to their work. Okay, so he woke people early in the morning. Yeah, but Rashi now continues, and he says, he saw that he was makeh ish ivri. He's beating this Hebrew man, but he wasn't killing him. He didn't kill him. He would beat him to the death's doorstep, but he never killed him. And he says, what is going on? It is more than simply meets the eye. This is not ordinary, regular torment. This is not a regular beating. Something else going on here. Because there were, like, it was targeted beatings. He wasn't just beating everybody. He was going after this guy, and he was harming him and hurting him and beating him and tormenting him. So Rashi says, Malkehu v'roideihu. He would beat him, and he would torment him. He went after him. Who is this person? What's going on here? So Rashi gives us the backstage story. Ubaila shal shloimis bas divri haya. This was the husband of a very licentious Hebrew lady. Her name was Shloimis bas divri. The nasan einav ba, and the Egyptian fell in love with her. He lusted her. So what did he do? It wouldn't look good. He couldn't do this overtly. This is frowned upon by the Egyptians. So ha'amidai, he woke him up, middle of the night, balaylo ha'amidai, v'hitziyam, he basically took him out of his house. V'hu chazav v'nichnas labayas, he went into the house, u'bo alishta, he consorted with his wife. Kizvura, shehu, shehu baila. Half asleep, she thought it was her husband. Then v'chazar ish labayasai, the man went back into his house after he was allowed back in, and he, v'hirgish bedavar, he figured out what was going on over here. And when this Egyptian abuser, this rapist, when he understood shehigish bedavar, that the husband had figured out what was going on here, he would beat him, he would torment him, he would abuse him kol hayom, all day long. That's the story of Shlemish Bas Divri, a very tragic story from the tribe of Dan. Incidentally, she does have a son. He's a rotten fellow. He does some terrible things later on, and actually, he has to be put to death by the court of Moses much later on when they leave Mitzrayim. But that's many years in advance now. Moshe Rabbeinu is 18 years old now, and this will only take place in more than 60 years, 63 or 64 years later. That's the rest of the story that's going to unfold. But there was a very unfortunate situation. And that boy, that man, who was in his 60s later, was born from an Egyptian father. He was a product of rape. He didn't have a tribe. Anyway, a lot of trouble. Bottom line is, the Torah tells us about this because Torah wants us to know that this was the only such licentious woman amongst all of the Jewish people. So the Egyptians would mock the people and say, you think that they are Hebrews? You think that they have pedigree? You think they have lineage? We controlled them. We did it as we pleased. They're all victims of rape. And the Torah says that's not true. There was one. Just one of a whole nation, just one story that happened. And this story, Moshe Rabbeinu stumbles upon. And he sees the guy tormenting him. And Moshe Rabbeinu feels terrible about this. Because it seems that he did this multiple times, this little monster, this abuser. And because he was continuously abusing this woman, but figured out that the husband realized what he was doing, so he began to beat him. A terrible, terrible individual. So Moshe Rabbeinu picks up on all this. Vayifen koi v'choi. So when he finally figures out exactly what's going on, he looks this way, looks that way. Vayar, and he sees Kainish, there's no man. And when he saw that, Vayach esamitzi. So he struck the Egyptian, Vayitmenehu bachol. And he hid the evidence, he hid his body in the sand. Let us take a look at, we'll start off at Rashi now. Vayifen koi vachoy. He looked this way and he looked that way. So does this mean that he looked physically, that he went like this and like this? Rashi says not. Not necessarily, no. It speaks here, it's figurative. Vayifen koi vachoy does not refer to a physical, so to speak, turning one way or the other. But rather, Moshe Rabbeinu investigated. That's the meaning of koi vachoy. Looking here and looking there means he does a full investigation. And turning this way, he discovers me'osaloi babayis. He figures out exactly what this guy did in the home. He's a rapist, a very bad man. He used somebody else's, he broke somebody's confidence, and he did it in a way that he shouldn't even have to take responsibility. He made believe he was the husband. And then he looked the other way. What does this mean? That this person is not only an abuser of women, then he abused the husband afterwards, and he beat him. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu said, on account of both of what he did to her and did to him, Moshe Rabbeinu decided that the death penalty was the right, appropriate thing to do. That's what this guy deserved. There was no way out. There was no way to change the situation. And Moshe Rabbeinu made that decision. So that's how Rashi starts off. Rashi starts off that Vifin Koy V'Choy is proverbially speaking, not literally or physically looking this way or that way. But Rashi does point out, Ulefi Pshutai, if you want to take this very literally, okay, so then if you want to take it literally, you could say, Kimashmoy, the way it sounds, look this way, look that way, which means Moshe Rabbeinu also could have looked this way and that way. What's the point here? Moshe Rabbeinu is the kindest, most considerate, most sensitive, and holiest of people. He doesn't just kill people. Moshe Rabbeinu is not just this crazed vigilante who goes around popping people's heads off. He took this way, that way. He said, oh, can I get away with it? Nobody looking. Boom. Got rid of the guy. It just doesn't make any sense. It doesn't add up to the persona that we know of Moshe Rabbeinu. When he just killed somebody, why did he kill him? And if you read the verse literally, why? Because he could. Because nobody was around, or because he thought nobody was around. And he could hide the evidence, and then nobody would know the difference. So Rashi says that just doesn't work. Why would the Torah even tell that to us? Of what relevance is that? Moshe Rabbeinu said, anybody looking? Can I get away with this? Boom, that's it. Another one bites the dust. So therefore, the Vayifen Koy V'Choy has to be revealing. And it tells us about Moshe Rabbeinu's perception, and it tells us about Moshe Rabbeinu's investigation, and that he was very deliberate about this. He took this very seriously, and he saw that there was absolutely no choice. To augment the words of Rashi, it's important for us also to know that the Vayifen Koy V'Choy, looking this way and looking that way, results in Vayar Ki Einish. What does it mean, Vayar Ki Einish? So Rashi says that Vayar Ki Einish does not refer to something physical, that he saw there was nobody watching him. It says, Rashi says, this means She'ein Ish Osid Lotzeis Mimenu, that Moshe Rabbeinu could prophetically perceive that there was no descendant of this person, She'yizgayer, who would, so to speak, convert or become a righteous individual. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu had to look at his actions and the consequences of his actions. Was he stopping something good from happening? Was he eliminating this guy and in turn stopping or hurting somebody in the future? And Moshe Rabbeinu could see that there was nobody who was going to result that was positive from this. So this was all negative, a negative individual. And here, I think, is a very critical part of this. Moshe Rabbeinu, according to the Ksav HaKabbalah, looks this way and that way to see, is anybody going to get involved in the fray, to jump into the fray? And he sees nobody's going to jump in the fray. The Emek Dover is even more direct here. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu looked deeply and he saw that this was unjust. And that the reason for the beatings was because he was a Hebrew. Nothing else. There was nothing that this man did to deserve the torment that he was receiving. And so when Moshe Rabbeinu said, so this is just unjust. If you want to say he's a slave, he violated his bond, he didn't follow the orders, he has responsibility, didn't do what he's supposed to do. In that case, that's why he's getting beaten. Okay, it's not nice, it's not fair, people shouldn't be abused, but at the end of the day, he earned it. But Moshe Rabbeinu saw that he didn't do anything wrong. It wasn't even as if the extraordinary demands and unreasonable demands being made were met. The person followed all the orders he was supposed to get, so why was he being beaten? Moshe Rabbeinu saw one reason, because he was a Hebrew. Because this person can get away with it. This is pure naked anti-Semitism. And then Moshe Rabbeinu, v'yifin koi v'choi kori, the Emek Dover was, he said, okay, is there any magistrate, is there any court system, can I lodge a complaint anywhere? This violates Egyptian law. He was allowed to beat the slaves for the purpose of getting them to work, but here he wasn't trying to get him to work. Here's this plain, simple abuse. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, there's nobody home. There's nothing to talk about. There was no court system. There was no way in which he would be able to lodge a formal complaint in order to bring some justice to the situation. So there's no, and that's what Emek Dover says, V'yarki einish, he says, seeing that there's nobody to lodge a complaint against, he said they were all the same way. The authorities, when Moshe Rabbeinu went to the authorities, said, this guy's he's a rapist. He's been raping this woman continuously, and then he beats the husband because he figured it out. They said, ha, he's a Hebrew. Who cares? Moshe, so what do you mean? This is a country of law and order. We believe in enslaving Hebrews. Oh, okay, fine. So you take advantage of people, but there's still rules here. They said, no, not when a Hebrew. There's no rules. Anybody can do whatever he wants. Moshe Rabbeinu said, oh, so this is a lawless society? When it comes to Jews, there's no rules? Moshe Rabbeinu said, in that case, I have no choice. So he didn't just jump to be a vigilante. When he looked into the situation and he saw what's going on here, that's when he made the decision to eliminate this fellow. And that's what he did. Rashi tells us Moshe Rabbeinu, when he made his decision, not only did he look at the current situation, but as we said, he even looked deeply into the future. And that's Moses the vigilante. The story could have ended there, but unfortunately it didn't. Unfortunately, Vayetze b'yem ha'sheni, Moshe Rabbeinu went out the second day again. And this time he sees something else. V'hinei shnei anoshim ivrim nitzim, there's two Hebrews that are fighting. Vayemer Moshe Rabbeinu says, l'rasha, to the wicked one, l'ma sakareyecha, why would you strike your fellow? In other words, you're utilizing what God has given you, the gift of life, the wherewithal that you have, in order to harm somebody else, and that makes you wicked. So he says, l'ma sakar. Rashi says, Lama Saka. It doesn't say, Lama, why did you hit him? Why would you hit him? It says, Rashi, Afal Pi, Shalohiko, even though he didn't hit him, Nikra Rasha, he's called wicked, Baharamas Yad, when he raises his hand. And this, the words of Rashi are very precise here. In Sefer HaMitzvahs, the Rambam says that it's forbidden to raise a hand against somebody else, to strike somebody else in a violent way. He said, what's the proof? The proof is from Moshe Rabbeinu, that he said, Rasha, Lama Saka. So the Rebbe asks, 1 second, but the guy didn't hit him. He didn't hit him. He just raised a hand. And the Rebbe's answer is, he did take an action. He threw a punch. He happened to have missed. But he did try to hit him. So it's not as if he didn't do an action. He did try. And because he tried to do something bad and wicked, and because he tried to hurt somebody, he was already a Rasha. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, what are you doing? And why are you hitting your neighbor? Rasha kamaischa. He's going to say, a wicked man just like you. And the Hebrews didn't like this young prince mixing in to their business and telling them how to live their lives. And they said, oh, who are you? Me samcha le'ish sarva shefet. You little tzutzik. You 18-year-old boy who barely has whiskers on his chin. You're telling us what to do now? Who made you a sarva shefet aleinu? Who made you a ruler? Who made you a judge over us? Hala hargeinu ataymer. Ha, you plan to speak us into death too now? What does it mean, speak you into death? So Rashi says, Hala hargeinu ataymer teaches us that how did Moshe Rabbeinu kill the Mitzri? That he killed him by virtue of his words, by pronouncing the name of God. In case you're wondering if Moshe Rabbeinu was holy, and in case you're wondering if he did everything according to God's will. So they said, you're going to speak us into that too? You're also going to use your black magic, say a few words and kill us too? And Moshe Rabbeinu said, uh-oh, achei neida hadavar. So this is nobody's secret. So people did see. And in fact, these individuals went to the authorities. And they informed them, Moses. And the Pharaoh decided to try and kill Moses for what he did. But Hashem saved him. And that's a whole long story in and of itself of how he gets saved. We're going to conclude this morning with what I can only describe as an exquisite, beautiful, and heartwarming message that the Rebbe lifts from this whole vigilante story. Page Ayin Gimel. Simon Chafalef. The Rebbe says, did you notice that this is really the first episode in the saga named Moses? This is the opening scene in the movie, really. I mean, before now, Moshe Rabbeinu gets born. Gets raised, gets put in the bulrushes, gets found by a princess. He was a passive actor. This is the first time Moses is actually doing something. Up until now, things are being done with him. And this is the Mimaisa Zeshol Moshe, from this action, not the story of Moses. The story of Moses begins when his parents get married or when he's born. But the story of Moses' actions, Moshe Rabbeinu does lots of things during the course of his lifetime. Many of them we aren't told about. Like, for example, when he runs away from the Pharaoh and he joins the Ethiopian and Eritrean army and he rises and becomes a general. And 9 years after joining the armed forces, he becomes the king of Ethiopia and he remains the sovereign of that country for 4 decades until he decides to go off to Arabia, to Midian, and see if he can find himself a wife. We don't even know about that. That's all midrashic. The scripture does not allude to it. It's not of real relevance to us. Therefore, the scripture doesn't address it. But this the scripture does share. This is the first scene we hear about, the first thing we hear. And what's Moshe doing? This is the first of Moses' actions that is narrated, described in detail in the Torah. The Rebbe suggested on Shabbos Parsha Shmais, it was a Matzah Shabbos. Those were the months that followed the heart attack that Rebbe used. Instead of Fabring on Shabbos, that was Fabring on Saturday night, Matzah Shabbos, which is why we have it all on tape today. It's amazing. You listen to a Shabbos Fabring that the Rebbe did on Matzah Shabbos. So on that Matzah Shabbos, in the years, it's January 1980, and the Rebbe said, there's an amazing lesson that's being conveyed to us from this first story, first episode in the life of Moshe's actions. And this is the lesson. Moshe gadol bebeis ha-melech. Moshe grows up in the house of the king. So he comes there somewhere around his 12th birthday, as we learned. And this story that we're reading now is around his 18th birthday. So for the last 6 years, where has he been? In the palace. How has life been in the palace? Probably well. Good, nice, right? Luxurious. He had everything he possibly could have needed. He lived a good life. So Moshe is living in the palace. And Bitoy Shel HaMelech, the only daughter of the king, we think she was the only daughter, Basya or Bitya, was very affectionate towards Moshe. She doted on him. She loved him. She didn't have any other children. This is her adopted baby. And Dago L'chol Tzrachov. So besides living in the palace, she has the princess who dotes upon him. Everything he could possibly need, Batya is there for him. L'chosser le'davar. He misses nothing. He's got to have every need met. Ulam reis kol zeis. And despite the fact that he lives in the lap of luxury and plenty, having everything he could possibly need, nonetheless, le'nishar meisha bebeis ha-melech. He doesn't stay in his cocooned and sheltered environment. Ela Yotza. He goes outside of that environment. He transcends his orbit of comfort. Why does he do this? He does this kedei lireis b'sivleisem shel echav ha-yehudim. He goes to see how are my brethren faring. How are they doing? Kedei lireis, why does he want to see? He's on a fact-finding mission. He used to have these fact-finding missions. They go to a place and they find facts. Then what do you do with it? I don't know. They write a report. Then the committee has another meeting. We talk about the facts. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't just go on a fact-finding mission. We know this because he took affirmative action. And the question to him, the reason he went out to see, to investigate, was, could he perhaps help to ease their burden? Could he do something to help? When he becomes aware, she'ish mitzri makah, Ish Ivri, that there's an Egyptian man who unfairly and illegally is beating this Hebrew man. And there's no recourse. He didn't think twice. He endangers his own life. Could easily have said, why should I get involved? There's no recourse. Everything is corrupt. The government is corrupt. The justice system is corrupt. Nobody will care. It's a Jew. I'm not getting identified with this. It's not going to harm me. I just hear no evil, see no evil, and move on. No, no, no. Moshe Rabbeinu said, I have to do something about this. Moses, you'll risk your life. He did risk his life. In the end, it was discovered. He was slated for execution. But Moshe Rabbeinu didn't think twice. His goal was singular. I need to save my brother. I need to save this Hebrew fellow, Miyada Mitzi. And this, the Rebbe says, is important to note. This was not exactly the chief rabbi of Goshen. This was not a particularly pious individual. He was by Lashal Shlemis Bas Divri. Shlemis Bas Divri was a licentious woman, and her husband was probably not such a big tzaddik himself either. So you're talking about a person who was a little too friendly with the guards, caught their attention, nobody's blaming her, but it was not, they were not a modest couple. Hayechida Mikol b'neis Yisrael, the only one from amongst the daughters of Israel who was promiscuous. Shapir Sama Kosov, the Torah speaks about her. And it's not even, it's like, why would the Torah do this? Why do we have to talk about this woman 3,300 years later? Almost 3,400 years later. But she's a Zoyna because she was promiscuous. And the Torah wants us to know there was one promiscuous woman. That's it. And Moshe Rabbeinu is dealing with her husband. He could not have been the super chassid. It was a shidduch, you know? She was promiscuous, he was promiscuous. That's what we have to assume. And yet, Moshe Rabbeinu says, the man's in trouble. He's being tormented. Nobody was doing anything. No recourse. I need to take affirmative action. Moses, it's vigilante justice. You end up in trouble. You yourself might pay with your life. So be it. Moshe Rabbeinu cannot stand by and countenance this. He can't watch it unfold. What's the hira? What's the lesson, my friends? The lesson is gam kasha yehudi nimsa beheichal ha-melech. Even if you find yourself, proverbially speaking, in the king's palace, beheichal ha-yishal melech malcham lacham ha-kadosh baruch hu, here's a Jew who's living in the lap of spiritual luxury. He's living in Borough Park or Bathurst and Lawrence. He's got the kosher bakery and the kosher grocery. He's got a yeshiva and a kollel. He's surrounded by the environment, which is a palace of Yiddishkeit. A place of Torah and Tefillah. There's no lack of kosher food. You could get yapchik and pastrami, and then some. Nothing is missing. Everything is there. You're living in a beautiful life. What's expected of you? You should learn and daven. You'll make a living, no problem. And they say, I should worry about some Jew, some Yid on the outskirts of Yiddishkeit. He could move to my neighborhood if he wants. He could start to learn Torah. He doesn't come. The Rebbe says, all of Lotzeis, your job is to go out of your comfort zone. Lechapes Yehudi, go find this Yid who's far from Yiddishkeit. Shechoso Davima, something's wrong in his life. Well, if you ask him, he wouldn't agree to that. His life is great. Was he Yiddishkeit? I don't have any Yiddishkeit. What's that to you? So, well, I am a Yid, and therefore, if you don't have Yiddishkeit, something's missing in my Yiddishkeit. V'zois, a Jew from high pedigree. They tell a story. Once there was a chassid, a Lubavitcher guy, he's in a gas station, and he's putting on film with somebody. It's not so unusual. I do it all the time. And he says this was somewhere in Brooklyn, and another car with two kind of chassidim get out, and one says to the Lubavitcher putting on film, he says, "What are you doing with this bum, this goy over here? You're putting on film with him?" So he says to him, "You know who this is?" He says, "No, who is it? This guy." He's a direct descendant of the Baal Shem Tov. He says, wow, what a merit you have. What a zuchus. You're putting on tefillin with a direct descendant of the Baal Shem Tov. And he finishes putting on tefillin with him. He turns around and he says, tell me, a direct descendant of the Baal Shem Tov, this is a good thing to do. But a direct descendant of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, that's not worth your time. You're not speaking about a Jew with high pedigree. You're not speaking about a Jew who comes from any kind of fancy background. You're talking about a guy who's covered with tattoos, he's got his eyeballs pierced, He's involved in all kinds of narcotics. He's a lowlife, as you would see him. From the lowest families, not from the high ones. You got to find him. You got to help him. To overcome a situation. To save him from the proverbial Egyptians who are squeezing him. And to lift him and bring him on the king's highway home to Torah, to mitzvahs, and to Mashiach. That, my dear friends, is a lesson we can all learn from the Moses' playbook, from his first episode, first story of the action that Moshe Rabbeinu took, which launched, really, if you think about it, his entire career.